Alrighty, I could not be more happy tonight. It's Thursday evening. The Saints are about to kick off and hopefully destroy the Cowboys. I'm back home in Bethlehem in the outskirts of Philadelphia. It feels good to be back in the city of brotherly love. And most importantly, my man Justin is back. We're going to be talking Flyers. We got some Sixers, Phillies. Then we'll touch a little bit on the Eagles. Send request. Play us in. This is Flying High. All right. Well, what a week it's been. I hope if you didn't check out the Tuesday episode, it was just a little solo edition, kept it short, kept it very calm, not too heated. But it was a long week, I'll tell you. How was your holiday, Justin? You have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was good, man. Thank you for asking. It was, yeah, definitely weird not to be on with you the other night. But out of necessity, you held your own. You did a good job. So happy to be back tonight. But yeah, it seems like a lot has gone on. You know, we started off with we had a good Sixers week, right? The Eagles got a win, so that was good. And then the doors just came off the fly with the Flyers, right?
Boy, that escalated quickly.
Man, it's just been kind of a lot of stuff has been going on. I think a lot of stuff is still due to come down the pike. So I think we're going to have an exciting, you know, December. I have a feeling it's going to be nonstop for these next couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. We are going to have a lot to talk about. And as Justin mentioned, through all of the craziness that went on, it is wild. A lot of good things happened. But as always in Philadelphia, we're going to start with the negatives. Or I guess it's positive in a way. But Justin is our resident Flyer expert, and he's the resident Flyer expert on Section 215 as well. So he's really going to lead us in this discussion. But what the heck happened? It was just like out of the blue, they decided we're actually going to do something to change this horrible, horrible season.
Yeah, wow. And it's so funny because you and I haven't been able to talk a lot of Flyers on this podcast the last couple of times, just because with everything going on, like the Sixers have been good and relevant. And, you know, with everything going on with the Eagles, that has been what's taken up most of our time. And we haven't been able to fit in this underperforming mess of a Flyers team that all of us Flyers fans really thought was going to be a totally different story this season. So I had wrote a scathing like paragraph or a monologue that I wanted to say, you know, after that 6-0 loss Saturday at Toronto. I was heated, man. I was pretty much at the lowest I'd ever been in years with this Flyers team. Just another losing streak, just rinse and repeat. Management doesn't care. You know, the fans are becoming apathetic because the franchise has accepted mediocrity and all this stuff. And, you know, just when you think there's no end in sight for it, we're just going to have to endure another year of ho-hum. Maybe they make the playoffs. Maybe they don't. Or they get just pasted in the first round. Boom. Here comes the door gets kicked in. And Ron Hextall, the architect of this team, the GM that was brought in to take this franchise to new heights of relevancy and championships, has been ousted in dramatic fashion. And it's just like, I'm still a little bit in shock. I'll tell you why I'm not in shock, but I'm still coming to grips with that move.
Yeah. And it was interesting because you had this big rant written up for the podcast on Tuesday that you had written before any of that happened. And it was like, it came out of nowhere. Like, it wasn't really mentioned in your rant that they need to fire Hextall. And yet, that's the move that they went with. It was up in the air, it seemed, in your mind. I don't want to speak for you, but from what I gathered in our conversation, sounded like the coach was who we were looking more to blame. Obviously, Hextall had some issues and he was revered and enjoyed more at the beginning of his tenure. And once we've seen that, there hasn't been any you know, monumental progress or any really steps forward from what we've been seeing year after year with this Flyers team, that it was all, the burden was also on him. But why do you feel that the Flyers chose Hextall was the guy to go first?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll back up for a second and tell you, you know, when you bring a GM in, right, you hire a GM to change the direction of the franchise. Okay. It's a franchise altering move. It's a move that signifies that the team wants to go in a different direction. Most and always it's to try to get the team to contend for a championship. And when they brought Ron Hextall in, that was probably the biggest change in direction for this franchise in 20 years. I mean, it's really have to go back to find the last time that a move like this or bringing in a guy like this had signified a drastic change. The Flyers were always a team that, at least when Ed Snyder was alive, they were willing to contend. They were willing to spend money. They were willing to trade away assets, trade away picks, trade away young players. And in order to stay relevant, it's why they didn't miss the playoffs for 15 years, from the mid-90s all the way until the, you know, post-2010. They were relevant every single year. Excuse me, at the back, they did miss the playoffs in 2007, but that was a one-off. So this team made the playoffs literally every year for almost two decades, and there was a reason for that. And when they brought Ron Hextall in, basically Hextall said, I like young players. I like draft picks. I'm not going to go out and spend money on old aging veterans to keep this team relevant. We're going to try to rebuild, but we're also going to try to keep the team on the ice relevant as well, and they're going to compete. And early on, you know what? Everyone, we were all like, okay, we're okay with this because the old way didn't get us anything. The old way of spend it at the free agency deadline or spend in the offseason for these unnecessary contracts didn't get us anywhere. We never won anything. So I think for a lot of us Flyers fans, we were on board with Ron Hextall's plan. He drafted so well. He got us Ivan Provorov and Travis Konecny and Carter Hart, and we would not have the abundancy of picks and prospects that we do right now without him. So I have to applaud Ron Hextall first before I start knocking him down, because he did change the direction of our franchise for the good. That being said, this move needed to happen, and I'll tell you why this move needed to happen, but you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say thank you to Ron Hextall for making that necessary change in direction that I think the franchise desperately needed at the time under Paul Holmgren. And it just so happens that his time sort of ran out.
Yeah, and it seemed as if there was possibly dissension or just they weren't thinking on the same page between Holmgren and Hextall.
Yeah, and so basically what happens is you have we're in year four or five of Ron Hextall, I'm not sure. And like I said, Hextall drafted incredibly well. He spent those first 3 years drafting, accumulating picks, and those picks are slowly starting to turn into prospects and players that are young players that are playing on the team right now. Travis Sanheim being one of them, Ivan Provorov, Shane Gostisbehere. The team has youth and the team has talent. However, Hextall's plan was to basically build completely from within and to not ever – he sort of was like a hoarding prospects and talent, right? And so when this year – when they came into – they came into this year with two main needs. They needed a third-line center and they needed goaltending. They desperately needed goaltending badly. The people were already concerned about the coach, and that's one thing I haven't even mentioned. He hired and he made an out-of-the-box hire with Dave Hextall, who had never won anything at North Dakota. He was a college coach with no NHL experience, and he was riding with this guy. And this guy's – we're coming into this year, and Dave Hextall, if he – I mean, he's on the hot seat. There's no other way about it. So there's that. He hitched his wagon to two injury-prone goalies, Brian Elliott and Michael Neuwirth. And you're seeing what's happening now. They've had five goalies play. I mean, they have the worst goaltending numbers in the entire league. It's been an absolute disaster.
I mean, Neuwirth doesn't – like, it seems like as soon as he touches the ice, something tears or something stretches out of the ordinary. Like, he showed so much promise in the past, but he just can't seem to even step on the ice for half of a period before getting injured.
It's ridiculous.
That ain't proof.
So there's that. And Brian Elliott, when he's played, has actually been pretty good. It's just that he's endured some stretches of injury, and right now he can't stay healthy. He's 33. So the goalie situation has not helped the Flyers at all. It's one of the biggest reasons why they're a bad team right now. It's not the biggest reason, but if it's not first, it's second or third. And so those things were going against Hextall. And Hextall admittedly himself said this was the year that they were supposed to take a step forward. And he went out and made that JVR signing. It was a good signing. It wasn't a blockbuster signing. It wasn't a signing that you looked at and said, oh, wow, they're definitely going to be a playoff contender now. But you looked at it and said, all right, with the talent that they have on this team, JVR can add to that. They lost a couple guys via subtraction. And you're looking at this and you're like, okay, this team should be a playoff team. And to see what they're doing right now, I think that management, Dave Scott, CEO, and Paul Holmgren, president, realized that Ron was not going to deviate from his plan. And they used the word unyielding a lot in their press conference. They used that word unyielding. He was unyielding in his plan. He was so dedicated to his plan that he was not going to deviate. He was not going to go out and make a move that might cost a draft pick or might cost a prospect. And ultimately, I think that they felt, and justifiably so, that they needed to move on and bring in someone with a fresh outlook.
And this, you would think, especially in this day and age, when you can sort of make a prototype as to how to be successful as a GM. You look at teams that were successful in the past, and you look at whether it be hockey, whether it be baseball, any team. Success is not 100% homegrown. It doesn't seem that's possible for success to be 100% homegrown. You need some sort of outside talent, whether it be a free agent or a trade, that brings in a different perspective and kind of meshes into that championship mentality where you get it. Because if you're homegrown, you don't have that experience in the playoffs or experience in different situations that aren't just everybody was on the same team doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's what's so head-scratching about this entire thing. You have Ron Hextall, arguably, you know, it's Bernie Perrant's number one, but Ron Hextall's the second best goalie in this franchise's history. I mean, he's royalty in this town. So for him to – when you take the GM job in Philadelphia, you know that this is a thirsty franchise, right? They're thirsty for a championship, but they love their hockey team. And – they want to see their hockey team be successful. So for Ron Hextall to come here and to play the long game, I think a lot of fans, like I said, were willing to buy it at first. They were willing to say, all right, we're okay with rebuilding. We want to stock the pantry. We want to get young, exciting players in here. But when you don't make the necessary moves to improve the team that's on the ice every night, and you only do the bare minimum, and those every year it's just the same thing. You're just flirting with mediocrity. The fans are going to get restless. This city does not tolerate mediocrity. We don't do it. We don't, especially from a team like the Flyers, who are always have always been in it. And we're a good hockey city. We are. We always seem to like we have a good team. And for the past 4 or 5 years, it's been nothing but the same. And it's just like, you know, it hasn't been good for the team. It hasn't been good for the fan base. And so I think when I got the text that Ron was fired, I was like, holy crap. But then I was also like, yeah, you know, I think that kind of needed to happen, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's weird how they kind of they went through the rebuilding stage, much like the Sixers process. But the Sixers process was more publicized and clearly more focused on tanking. But while the Flyers were rebuilding and regrowing, they still found success and they still found their way into the postseason. And while it might not have been pretty all year, the season was not a failure until this season. This is really the first season where it was like, okay, we are tired of the same thing over and over.
Yeah. And that's, you ask any Flyers fan to any diehard Flyers fan too, kind of how they view the whole Hextall rebuild. You find that word rebuild gets thrown around a lot, but you have to ask yourself, was it even really a rebuild? Because the way that they stockpiled picks it was a rebuild in the sense that Ron never made a big ad, right? He never made a big free agent ad. He never took this team and said, all right, we're good. We have Claude Giroux. We have Jake Voracek. We have Wayne Simmonds. We're going to make a splash. We're going to, you know, we're going to make an addition that helps us make a playoff push. He was never, ever, ever going to do that. He proved that year in and year out. And so in that way, it was a semi-rebuild. They weren't tanking, because I don't think the tanking works in the NHL, and I don't think that Hextall did either. You look at Edmonton Oilers. They had, you know, 6 or 7 first-round picks in the last decade, and look at them. But it was just never a true rebuild in that sense, because, you know, the way he was stockpiling picks, the way he was accumulating talent, and then just slowly but surely bringing them up, but not doing enough to really push the team, push the needle in one way or the other. They kind of just were what they were. And I think that's what was so frustrating and why I think a lot of Flyer fans right now are breathing a sigh of relief, even though we have absolutely no idea what is going to come for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so that makes us look forward. Like, where are things going with this team now? The assistant coach and assistant GM have been fired, and Hackstall's most certainly on the hot seat. If they get rid of him anytime soon, this team is basically a free for all, if it's not that already.
Well, I think that's what they're trying to prevent right now. I think the biggest question I think a lot of people had at first was, why not Hextall? I think there was some shock there with the way that it went Hextall first. But I think after the press conference, there was some clarity there. See, Dave Scott and Paul Holmgren obviously felt that nothing was going to be done to address. Now, Paul Holmgren said that the firing the coach was never brought up. I don't know that I necessarily believe that to be true. I think it had to come up at some point. But I think once they realized nothing was going to change and Ron was willing to ride this one out, they had no choice. Now, Hextall's job is not safe by any means. I think almost always a new GM will hire his own coach. And I think that we're pretty much seeing the final days of Dave Hextall now. It really just depends on how bad this team falls into the tank. If they really, really fall off, which can happen when a big change like this occurs, I think no one is safe. I think they could very well just clear house. I think the problem right now, they really don't have anybody who can take over. There's one guy who I think they could go out and get, and that's Joel Quenneville. We spoke about him previously.
Get him some Wawa.
Yeah, get that guy a gobbler, because really – you ask any Flyers fan right now, that's the only guy at the top of their list. That's the only guy that, I mean, you got to go out and get this guy, in my opinion. And if it happens to be before the end of the season, fine. They don't want to fire the head coach right now and leave this team completely rudderless. And I can kind of understand that. You fire the GM, you don't want to fire the head coach, because who's going to coach the damn team, right? So what we're hearing now is they really like Chuck Fletcher, who is the former Minnesota Wild GM from 2007 to 2009 to like 2016, something like that. He was there for a while. He's now advising Ray Shiro as the GM in New Jersey. And he seems like it's his job to lose. So I don't really have a ton of information on him. I did look up a lot of the moves that he made, and you look at some of the things that are being said from some of the fans out in Minnesota, and genuinely, it seemed like he did a pretty good job there outside of a few moves. But I don't know. I can't really evaluate it because until I sit down and really look at, you know, how he might fit in here, I can't really evaluate it. But from what I'm hearing, mostly good. And the biggest draw to Chuck Fletcher is that he has a connection to Joel Quenneville.
There you go. It's one step at a time, right? First you bring in the GM, and then you get the Wawa, and together, the two of them, bring him to the team. Now, do you think that with the new GM and possible new coach in the future that we're heading towards a different type of atmosphere and a different culture within the building? And I know you had previously compared the Hextall era to the Chip Kelly era. Do you think that it's going to be that type of complete flip switch to the opposite type of culture?
Well, there's a couple things there. So, and you know, you and I are on Twitter a lot, and I my Twitter feed is very heavily focused on Eagles and Flyers, Phillies, Sixers, all that. It's pretty much all Philadelphia sports.
Yeah.
So a lot of the chatter that I've been seeing with, you know, with this is that a couple people had that close to the franchise had said, made comments about the culture being somewhat toxic with Ron in the building and sort of very reminiscent of Chip Kelly, and that, you know, he didn't want anybody really questioning him with his moves. It was his plan. He was going to go along with his plan no matter what. He did not want to deviate from it. And it sort of was intimated that, like, if anybody questioned that or if anybody didn't go along with that, they were kind of shown the door. And again, I can't prove any of that, and I don't have any specific quotes, but that is the information that I kind of was seeing with my own eyes. So it was very, very eye-opening in that way. Very surprising to me to hear all that, because, you know, even though I wasn't super happy with how this was going this year, I definitely didn't expect to see that. There being a culture issue. So yeah, but with a new GM, yes, I do. And Dave Scott and Paul Holmgren both said that they want, they're partial to someone who's going to come in and be more active than Hextall was. They made a point to say that. So whoever they hire, they're going to straight up tell them, if it's Chuck Fletcher, they're going to say, Chuck, we need you to be active, which means don't be afraid to send away players, picks, or prospects. And that to me is huge.
So to kind of wrap this all up and looking forward for the Flyers, do you anticipate any players in particular being shopped or looked at to send away?
First off, I think there's a couple players who are safe, right? I think that Shane Gostisbehere is safe. Claude Giroux is certainly safe. Carter Hart is not going anywhere. He's the future franchise goaltender. Ivan Provorov is most assuredly safe. But outside of that, I really don't know. I would have to think that a lot of people beyond those four or five guys are expendable. And you're looking at guys like Wayne Simmonds, Jake Voracek, you know, a prospect in Phil Myers, who's down in the AHL right now and has been someone that Flyers fans have been wanting to see up at the big level for a while. Guys like Isaac Ratcliffe and Morgan Frost, who are maybe two and three in terms of prospects in the pipeline right now. But that's just a thing. If you want to add pieces right now that are going to help you contend in the next few years, you have to be willing to move some of these things. And when I think about who other teams are going to ask for, it's guys like this, guys like Wayne Simmonds, Jake Voracek. So they're certainly going to ask for guys like Gostisbehere and Provorov, but I don't think you need to start gutting gutting the whole thing in order to make this team good enough to be a playoff team. I think you got to get goaltending. You got to get another center. You got to get another defenseman. Unfortunately, these things are not things that grow on trees. And to be honest with you, everybody now knows that the Flyers are desperate, right? Every other GM in the entire league knows now that the Flyers are going to be buying. So that, the prices for all these guys just went up.
And just a real quick update on Carter Hart, or I'm going to ask you at least, what's going on? Is there any chance that he sees Philadelphia this year in major minutes or any sort of, could he be the answer at goalie?
Well, my answer to that is complicated, because I thought that Carter Hart was the best goalie in camp. He definitely was. I mean, listen, that's not a hard battle to win, to be honest with you, but with the guys that we had here. But he's struggling down in the AHL. He's not putting up numbers that you would hope to see. But listen, this is just how goalies are. He's a 20-year-old kid. He barely knows how to pay his electric bill at this point. So he's 20 years old. I'm not super concerned. This kid was a record-setting goalie in the CHL. I mean, he put up historical numbers. This kid's going to be very, very good. I don't see a need to rush him, especially to get him up to a club that's playing poor defense and seems to have a fractured locker room right now. That's not a situation I want to rush him up into. So he's fine where he is. if he happens to get a late call up and late in the year to see what he can do when things are already out of hand, I'm fine with that. I don't foresee him coming up here to help this team push for the playoffs. I just don't see it. It's not necessary. Unless he starts absolutely lighting the AHL on fire, this team needs to look elsewhere for goaltending until he's ready.
So a lot going on in Flyerland. It's a wild time. Not what we wanted to see as Flyers fans this year. We were really hoping for a giant step forward, and instead we're left with a lot of question marks and looking forward to the answers at least to come in the next few weeks, that's for certain.
It's going to be a whirlwind, man. A lot of stuff's going to happen right away. And you saw how they not overreacted, but they reacted to a bad loss the other night, a come-from-behind loss against Ottawa. They fired the assistant GM and a coach the next day. So Holmgren said he wants to let the next GM make all those changes. But listen, if this thing gets worse, I don't think he can guarantee that. And I think they want to hire a GM by next week. I think they really like this Fletcher guy. So I think we could be looking at a new GM next week, and who knows what he's going to want to do. So buckle in, Flyers fans.
That's right, folks. Buckle in. And before we transition into the next topic, I really want to shout out Justin. We really missed him on Tuesday when I did my Flying High solo podcast. He was doing some parent-teacher conferences. But what I learned tonight as I log on, I see Justin sitting there in a different position, and it's interesting. He's holding his microphone up with his hand. And I learned that Justin injured himself at the gym today. And I'm thinking, oh, he probably was balling out and, you know, hurt his back or something. But turns out that Justin is an absolute monster on the elliptical / Stairmaster, whatever machine it is. Justin broke the machine and in turn broke himself and is sitting here in his bed.
Yeah. Listen, don't get old, kids. Okay. Just, try to stave off Father Time as much as you can. You're talking to a former Division I college athlete here, the peak of my athletic prime at one point. We are apparently far, far removed from that. So, you know what, kids, eat your vegetables, get lots of exercise, and don't ever take long periods in between going to the gym. That's all I have for you.
You know, I think you're just at the peak, and you are performing too well for someone your age, and the body just can't handle that. But nonetheless, you clearly have an injury, okay? There's physical pain. You have an ice pack on your back. You seems like you are having trouble walking and, quite frankly, existing right now. If we travel a little ways up to the Wells Fargo Center, or I guess in New York now, we have a first-round draft pick who has now decided on his own to not compete in games and just sit out of basketball activity due to what very well could be an injury to the mental stability of the kid, and they're just trying to hide it through these injuries. What on earth is going on? It's just so crazy that, like, this kid is supposed to be the future of the team, and I've been back and forth, kind of defending him and then saying, once he jabs at us and says he wants to be shipped away somewhere else, it's like, yo, we have had your back this whole time, and now you're just going to ask to jump ship after you're going to see a specialist, but you were playing the whole beginning of the season. And I don't know about you, Justin, but it didn't look like there was pain. It just looked like his shot was ugly and that he's got some sort of mental funk going on upstairs.
Dude, this whole thing is just bizarre. I know you and I were texting back and forth like almost immediately when that tweet came out. He was no longer – he had been advised by his lawyer / agent, because he does a dual role, to not compete in any more games or practices until he's evaluated. And my jaw just dropped. I was just like, are you kidding with this kid? More crap from this kid. Like, I don't understand. This is the most bizarre sports story I've literally, besides, this is right there with Andrew Bynum, right? Like, this is the most bizarre.
I think this might top that, to be honest. Like, this has just gone on far too long, and it doesn't even seem like the coaching staff knows what's going on at this point.
Man, can we get a bowling sound, or can we get some pins getting knocked down in honor of our Andrew Bynum? Because I think we're going to need that. So,
there you go.
Jeez. I mean, yeah, I don't know what to think. Someone is advising this kid. I have to think that someone has advised him. My first thought was, you know what? he got benched for that second half, right? The game before, the night before this had come out. Yeah. And my first thought was, you know what? His agent got into his ear and said, we need to come up with something so that you can get out of here, because you're a first round pick. You're not playing point guard minutes, and we got to get you out of here. That's literally the only thing I can think of, because how can one franchise continue to have these just absolutely bizarre injuries to their first round picks like every single year? It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, this one is just a whole new level, and it doesn't make sense. And I knew as soon as you texted me something that it wasn't descriptive enough to let me know exactly what happened, but you were just like, can you believe this? And like instantly it clicked. Something must be going on with Markelle Fultz. So I jumped on Twitter and typed in Fultz. I didn't search Philly sports. I didn't search Sixers. I searched for Fultz, because that is the only thing that you could possibly text. And it seems that everybody in Philly knows. It's just like when there's some sort of breaking news at this point, it's Markelle Fultz, and he's become a, I saw his name up there with some of the biggest draft busts in history. They were comparing him to Anthony Bennett. They were comparing him to Greg Oden. And it's like, at what point are we officially going to make the call that like this kid's up there with him and he's not coming back? Because I just don't see that freshman year Markelle Fultz ever playing again, especially not in this city.
No, I think we're there, man. I think we are there. And I don't know how he's ever going to survive this year. People are saying, well, we'd welcome Markelle Fultz back with open arms if he ever came back. I don't think so. I think this kid has burned every last ounce of goodwill he has with this city and this team. And Brett Brown can sit up there and say all he wants, that they're not looking to get rid of him, and they're, you know, that they want him here. And I mean, look at Joel's quote with him. Joel was basically like, I think he was so shocked. He was trying to stand up for and trying to say, you know, trying to say all the right things, but you know what he wanted to say was, what the hell?
Yeah. And Joel's someone who is no stranger to an injury that holds you out for a extended period of time. But the fact that they've switched their story so many times, and he's done multiple interviews where he claims he's completely healthy and he had different trainers working with him, and it seemed like the coaching staff and organization were never really certain what was going on. It's just so bizarre, man. And
I don't think we're going to find out, to be honest with you. I don't know. You and I both, I think, are of the mind that this is mental more so than it's physical. This kid is not ready to, he's not ready to play in the NBA. You know, he's flashed a little bit this year, and we both, I think, at times been like, okay, you know, if I see more of that, I think he can play. But this just knocks everything, him back down the stairs. He just fell down the stairs. You know what I mean? This is back to square one. And I have no idea what is going to happen with him. All I can think right now is, what can you even do with him? You can't trade him, right? He's not tradable.
I mean, at this point, it is well beyond publicized that you're not getting any fragment of the value that you gave up. Like, you're not trading him saying, yo, we are giving you the number one overall pick from that draft. It's like, no, we're giving you a psychotic head case who may or may not come back to the form that he once showed at Washington. Because I went back and I looked at his Washington highlight tape again just to see if I could persuade myself, or I don't know why I looked at the highlight tape, to be honest, because I did not like Markelle coming out of the draft as the number one player, and I didn't like trading up to get him. But for some reason, I went back and watched his highlights, and his shot's different, but his whole game, he plays like a confident player. He takes over the games. He never showed that kind of confidence on the court when he claimed he was healthy, and it seems he's not even confident in what his story is as to why he is not playing well.
No, I think if the question who's advising him, like I said, his agent and lawyer, you know, whatever, I think though that guy, whoever that guy is in his ear. And I don't know what to think about this kid. I don't know if he's upset about playing time. I don't know if he's just in his own head. I don't know if he is experiencing pain. I don't know. I don't know anything. I just feel like I keep saying the same thing over and over. I don't know, because I've literally never seen anything like this before. This is the strangest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, I think the craziest part is that there is even like we're the fans' perspective, right? So we take what the beats take from the coaches in the front office, and we kind of analyze that and break it down into more detail. But the beats don't know what's going on.
No,
the coaches don't know what's going on. Like, I don't think anybody has a straight story as to what's going on. The only people who actually know are Markelle Fultz and his lawyer. And who knows, like, at 20 years old, you could be not willing to share the truth with your lawyer. Like, Markelle Fultz is the only one who truly knows what is going on.
I think we're just along for the ride, my man. And I don't know. It sucks because, yeah, if you could trade him, you would almost – we would be trying to do that right now, right? I mean
oh, yeah.
People are talking about trying to go out and get Brad Beal. I'm like, how are you going to go get Bradley Beal? How are you going to do that if you're still stuck with Fultz and you can't offload him? I don't know. It's awesome that they got Jimmy Butler and that Joel Embiid is playing at an MVP level right now, because they really don't miss Fultz right now. It's hard to miss a guy you don't even know what he is, too, by the way. So it's really hard to kind of – we coming into this year, I wrote an article saying basically all the Sixers needed was a healthy and motivated Markelle Fultz, thinking that that would really, you know, him, Simmons, and Embiid would be all they really need. And, man, all I can think of is thank God we went and got Jimmy Buckets.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And something that I've noticed is that it almost seems in the absence of Markelle Fultz, this team has gelled even more so. And they are playing confidently. Whether they hold on to that third quarter lead, they finally did. I was actually at the game, at the Knicks game. I learned that the New York Knicks have nobody.
Like, no, they don't.
They actually don't have a player with a name who can shoot the ball, and their coach is about as recognizable as the team. But it felt so good to get into the Wells Fargo Center and experience the moment. We're in the moment now, I think. We've transitioned past the process. We are in the moment, and they finally just stomped on a team. They finally came together and stomped on a team. And even in the game prior where was it the Pelicans that they let come back again?
Yeah, the Pelicans came back on them, and they beat them. They beat them in overtime. No, that was the Jimmy Buckets shot, right? That was the final shot, I believe, against the Pelicans. It was either that or they went to overtime.
It was Brooklyn. It was Brooklyn that they beat Jimmy Buckets. So that was the last one where it wasn't a pretty game, but that was the second game without Fultz. They lost to the Cavs, and I guess the Pelicans was the first. Whatever it is, it feels that this team is just playing a lot better without the thought of Markelle Fultz. And TJ's really stepped into a role as that backup point guard where he gives you that energy and fight that Fultz really never showcased on the floor.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that this team has gelled really nicely with Jimmy and you know, I think we kind of have a feeling that these close games are going to stop at some point, especially with Joel playing the way he is. They're not going to be taking, you know, the Brooklyn Nets to 130, either to overtime with 130 points every night. I mean, and Kemba Walker's not going to drop 60 on them every time they play Charlotte. These things happen early on in seasons. And I think we know that this is a team that kind of gets hot later on in the season. So I think, and as Jimmy gets to play more games, yeah, they're going to continue to gel even more. But I'm pleasantly surprised with how it's happened so far, and I really like what I'm seeing out of them. So, you know what, Markelle? Like, I don't know, dude, take a walk, because to be honest with you, like, go down to the ocean, sit by the beach, and like sit there and like analyze your problems. I don't know what's going on with you, but you need to talk. You need to talk to somebody. You need to go swim with some dolphins or something, buddy, because I'm over it. No,
I think Dr. Justin just prescribed the perfect medication. I think Markelle has not sat down at the beach and let his thoughts run. And anybody who's done that has realized that's the only way to solve your problems. That's the best way. Just you in the ocean, baby. You in the ocean.
Like, does he have a girlfriend? Like, he just, I feel like him and his girlfriend just need to go on like a nice slow-mo run along the beach with like the waves crashing in the background, and just like he's got like an open shirt and it's just flowing in the wind, and just like just enjoy. I don't know. He needs to go enjoy something. I don't know what this. He needs something to take his mind off basketball, because his mind is clearly elsewhere.
Yeah, he definitely does. But it's great to see the Sixers are still chugging along, third place in the Eastern Conference. It's electric in the Wells Fargo Center. I have not been there since, you know, the big run last season, and it is electric in there. I will be back again if anybody wants to say hello. I'll be at the Grizzlies game. I had really nice seats at the Knicks game, but I will be sitting as close to the roof as possible in that Grizzlies game. But I just cannot wait to get back in there again and see those Sixers play. I'll tell you, it's a fun time to be a Sixers fan, aside from the Markelle Fultz saga.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't have much more to say about that, but it's awesome. The Sixers right now, thank God for them, because with the Flyers being as bad as they've been, we've actually had meaningful basketball to talk about. And God knows when the last time we've been able to say that, or last year, but before that, man, it's exciting. It's really cool to have basketball back in the city of Philadelphia.
It absolutely is. And while the Sixers were in town yesterday, so was Patrick Corbin, who's the Diamondbacks pitcher. Phils are interested in him, and the Phils had a laundry list of names that they were considering or have been mentioned in possible moves. You got Patrick Corbin, you got Jay Happ, Craig Kimbrell, Zach Britton, Michael Brantley, AJ Pollock, Paul Goldschmidt, Madison Bumgarner, Andrew Miller, and of course the Harper and Machado rumors. At what point are we finally going to make a move? Because the Braves beat us to the first punch getting Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, that was a good move for them. I mean, I don't think we obviously don't need a third baseman. I'm a Michael Franco fan. And they paid Josh Donaldson for what they paid Josh Donaldson. No, thank you. So I think we're all just waiting for the big one, right? We're waiting for Harper or Machado. You know, I saw something earlier get tweeted out that some exec believes it's going to be Machado now. So there's this constant flipping, flopping back and forth. So, I mean, it's so hard to believe what you're reading right now. Every beat is grasping for something, and every rumor is some guy that's close to the organization. So, you know, it's baseball offseason's weird, man. It's almost like a battle of wills, you know, especially with the kind of money that's being thrown around at these guys. No one's going to rush. Right. No. Like Harper. Oh, God, like if you're Bryce Harper, you're going to milk this cow until the sun goes down, man. I mean, you're going to ride this thing into the sunset. So, and that's exactly what I would do if I was him. So the Phillies, Matt Klentak, he's in a battle. He's in a battle with 30 other GMs out there. And I think probably we're not going to see anything significant, I think, until maybe Christmas, maybe even after that. I think that December is usually a good time. It's before, when are the winter meetings? They're coming up, aren't they?
I can check on that. I'm not exactly certain when they are, but they definitely are coming up. I think is it early in the season when they usually do that?
It's either before Christmas or after Christmas. I just can't. I think it's right around Christmas, those winter meetings. So, and sometimes you see moves go down, you know, right around those winter meetings, GM, or like afterwards, GMs get together, they get a chance to face to face. So I wouldn't be surprised to see something happen maybe after the winter meetings.
Yeah, it looks like they're held in early December as well.
Okay.
So they are coming up soon.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, there's a couple names that I have heard that I'd definitely be into: Pat Corbin and Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, we need a first baseman, I think. But one thing that I heard that, and I know I can't confirm this, was that it seemed like Carlos Santana was someone that could maybe bind up a move like that, because we have to be able to move him, and we're paying him a lot of money. And I don't know, you know, I think he might be a hard sell at this point, with his batting average being what it was last year and his numbers what they were for the kind of money he's being paid. That could be a tough sell.
So a name that really intrigued me was Madison Bumgarner. Yes. I don't know how realistic that is, but everybody's focused on getting another batter, and it is important to get another batter and, you know, another star that can fill up the lineup. But this pitching staff surely could use another stud arm who can go longer than four or five innings.
Well, I think there's only one guy we can really rely on in my mind, and that's Aaron Nola. I don't think that going into next year, you can really say that you have full faith in Jake Arrieta. I don't think that you can say you have full faith in Nick Pivetta, Vince Velasquez, or Zach Eflin. And I've been on record as saying I was a big fan of that five-man rotation last year. I think because at one point, maybe in June or July, they were all just hitting on every cylinder. And it was like, man, this is a good rotation. And I think that they're all good pitchers. They all do certain things very well. But the way that the other four kind of fell off, or at least Arrieta was kind of up and down all season, I think you have to go out and get pitching. Pitching has to be, after Machado and Harper, it's got to be pitching.
Without a doubt, Nola was the guy who was solid every time out. I feel like Arrieta can still give you something. You need more than 3 or 4 runs a game, though, to back you up. You can't be asking your pitchers to go out game after game and give up 2 or less runs. But when I'm looking at Bumgarner, I'm seeing a really great pitcher, and I'm seeing a lefty. And that changes things up a little bit, which I like to see. Instead of throwing a righty out every game, if it's a 3-game series, a lefty comes in there, might screw some stuff up.
You need a lefty. And you know what? I was talking to a guy the other day. Lefties can just pitch forever, man. You know, lefties, they have long careers.
Jamie Moyer.
Yep. Look at that. Look at Jamie Moyer. So I do think you need to get a lefty in here. Pat Corbin would be nice. Madison Bumgarner. I would love Madison Bumgarner for the right contract. He's 28. I mean, he's not old. He's not old. I mean, he'd give you 3 or 4 years. So it would be surprising if San Francisco was, I guess they're in rebuild mode though. You know, they kind of need to tear it down. They don't really have much left outside of their him and the Hunter Pence. Let's go.
I saw something where he's outlasted all the prospects that they traded him for. But geez. he was a great player while he was here, though. That was a fun short ride.
Buster Posey was the guy I was thinking of. Outside of him, really, he's even getting up there. Probably hasn't been the same since that freak accident. But I guess they're in teardown mode, so probably makes sense that they'd be looking to get something back for him.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll be patient in Philly land, but for now, we're looking at turmoil with the Flyers. That is a light at the end of the tunnel. You got the Sixers who have who knows what's going on with their number one overall pick from a year ago, but they're in third place in the East and looking stronger than ever. And then the Phillies have a laundry list of possible players to come in and help get them back over the hump and into the playoffs. And one last thing we got to touch on, Justin, because it's flying high. It's the Philly fan perspective. We're Eagles fans in this city, and we have a massive, massive game coming up on Monday night. Whether you believe that this team can still make it into the playoffs, this is really going to be a good test to see, A, if we have a team that's worthy of competing for the NFC East title, especially after tonight's game with the Saints and Dallas playing. We'll know so much more after that. But this is the first test for that. We can see a few players coming back. I think Avante Maddox, Jalen Mills, and Jordan Hicks did not practice today. Otherwise, everybody else did. So we're at least looking at the return of Sidney Jones at corner, which is a fresh breath of air, to say the least. And the last thing that I think that Monday is really important is to see how Carson Wentz responds in a big-time must-win game. And I know we toss the word must-win around like it is just...
Every week?
Every week. But for the first time this season, I believe if the Eagles lose... I know if the Eagles lose this game to the Redskins, they're not making the playoffs. So this is a must win that I want to see our quarterback show us that he's got what it takes to win those games.
Yeah, and it's notable that the Cowboys just went up 10-0 on the Saints. So there's that right now. So
all right. Is there a bucket I can go throw up in? Like, I'm not gonna lie, Justin. It took me everything inside me right there to not say the worst of swear words, because 10-0 Cowboys to the Saints.
Yeah. I mean, it's still only the end of the first. So, I mean, the Saints, you know, the Saints can score points at will. So I think we have to pay attention to this one. But listen, if the Cowboys win this game, yeah, we have to win. This was the game we had circled on our calendars when we talked a few weeks back. And with Colt McCoy at quarterback, listen, if the Eagles lose this game, I will not only be just emotionally crippled. I don't even know, man. You might have to do the rest of the podcast yourself, because I don't even know if I'll have the strength to talk. If we're that bad that we can't beat Colt McCoy, I don't know. Then just shut it down, because what's the point of trying to get to the playoffs? What's the point?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we might just have like 30 minutes of silent air on Tuesday if the Eagles lose that game, because I will not be able to contain anger.
Can we just play taps for like 30 minutes?
Yes.
Does that go against like, I think we might get copyright
complaints or something. We'll have to play it ourselves. We'll just sit here and hum tap.
Jeez.
Oh my goodness. Like, it's hard to believe that it's come to this.
Yeah. To answer your question, I do think that the Eagles will win Monday. I don't see any way that Colt McCoy beats us. Now, that said, I didn't think we would lose to the Cowboys either, but clearly the Cowboys are a better team than we gave them credit for, and the Eagles were not as good a team as we thought they were. So, but this Redskins team is not good. They lost the only redeeming quality they had, which was Alex Smith. Colt McCoy is not a good football player. He's been their backup quarterback since I was in high school, I'm pretty sure. So you got to win this game. I honestly don't care if it's by 1 point or if it's by 3 touchdowns. You got to win. We know that they've been winning ugly. I think that they'll probably continue to win ugly, but the hope is that they win ugly while continuing to get some of these pieces back, like you said, on defense. Jim Schwartz, I got to give him some credit. I don't want to give him a ton of credit because I've been very hard on him, and justifiably so, but he did a nice job with that unit of absolute replacements this past game. He did a nice job with those guys. Those guys, they did what they needed to do to get the team to win. So with some reinforcements coming back on defense, we have to hope that they will be better. So I'm expecting them to win this game.
I mean, I do expect them to win the game. And my thought process was, you know, you tough out the injuries with the Redskins, and then you'll probably get Mills and Maddox and possibly even Hicks back for that Cowboys game. So you're just slowly building back to full strength. But it also concerns me if the Cowboys beat the Saints. Like, I'm not going to lie, I hadn't really put that possibility into my like prediction pool. So like, if the Cowboys win this game, that game that we lost against the Cowboys is really, really, really going to hurt.
Yeah, they'll be 7-5, and I wonder we're 5-6 right now. We'll be 6-6, so we'll be 2 games, but one game and a half. I forget how it works in football, but we would need to obviously win out against the Skins, beat the Cowboys that final game, and hope that the Cowboys. I mean, we had this penciled in as a loss for the Cowboys, so if they win, I mean, that just makes our road much. We already have to almost win out. We know we're not going to beat LA, but now you look at that Houston game, man. Look at the way come on. Holy crap. I mean, then that game now becomes a must win. Then you got to beat Dallas, who you lost to. It's like, this is like that year where with McNabb, where everything had to break our way to get into the playoffs, right? It's almost going to be like that.
And when you look at the Cowboys schedule, I mean, the Colts are playing decent right now, but they end with the Bucks and the Giants. So really, you have to bank on the Cowboys losing this one, then we beat the Cowboys, and the Colts have to beat the Cowboys for us to have any chance.
Yep. So
all we can do is wait.
Yep. And we keep interrupting each other.
I know. I don't know about you, but I am so mind blown that it's 10-0 Cowboys right now that like the whole show just went to poop. To put it nicely.
I didn't mean to ruin everything. I feel responsible now.
Yeah, we are all good. I'm actually gonna close it up with a segment. I did one on Tuesday The Now You Know segment where it's. Do you remember when Sean Taylor got shot?
It was 11 years ago, right? So I was in my early 20s. I vaguely remember.
Yeah, that was like one of the first players that I knew I was too young to really understand the magnitude, but he was unbelievable. That's like losing your star player. And he was protecting his family in a burglary gone wrong. So
awful, just awful. You know, he's a guy that's up there with, you think of guys like LeVar Arrington and Lawrence Taylor. He was up there. I mean, he was that good. It's a shame.
It is. And I just wanted to, you know, give him one more shout out because we don't like the Redskins. We don't like the Cowboys. We don't like the Giants, but he was a good guy. On top of he was definitely not the worst player ever to step into the NFC East off the field. Unlike what the heck's his name for the Redskins now?
Colt McCoy.
No. The guy they just picked. Like, why did they pick?
The guy they picked up. Oh, Mark Sanchez.
No. The guy who just got kicked off the 49ers, who they pick up, who can't play. He's on the commission. Reuben Foster. Foster.
Okay. Sorry.
To put it nicely, he is a D-bag, a S-head. Like, that guy is the scum of the earth. And they just picked him up because it was like, a linebacker.
They basically said, they are aware of everything that's going on with him. And still they picked him up. Some franchises are just, you know, I think every other franchise did the right thing and stayed away from him. And the Redskins couldn't help themselves.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. But I do want to do a positive Now You Know. So this is Now You Know, the segment where you kind of learn something new that you might not have known before. I just stumbled upon this article before starting the podcast. And it is crazy that Wawa is working with 2SP Brewing Company to craft a 2SP and Wawa Winter Reserve Coffee Stout beer with Wawa's Reserve Winter Blend Coffee. And it's going to launch on December 6th at the Wawa at 721 Neyman's Creek Road in Chads Ford, PA. It's the only store in Pennsylvania that sells beer. That's why they're launching it there. And then they're going to distribute it out of one beer distributor, and only 1,000 cases are going to be made. And I don't know if you love Wawa as much as I do, Justin, but the thing that I miss most about not living in Philadelphia is Wawa. And my second favorite thing is beer. So put together Wawa and beer. I need to get a case of this before they're all gone.
Wow, that sounds downright delicious. So, I mean, I'm admittedly more of a Dunkin' Donuts coffee guy when it comes to that. But, Wawa food guy? I mean, listen, I'm into it. So fortunately, when I was at Penn State for 4 years, we did have Sheetz, and I know that age-old battle still kind of – I know.
Get the Boo-Birds going. Back me up here.
You suck!
Sheetz did the job, I will say that. But it doesn't certainly – when you come back into this area and you can have Wawa, you're going to go Wawa every time. So I'll say that much.
Absolutely. So that's going to be it for Flying High tonight. It was a great Thursday night / Friday morning whenever you're listening. Special edition. Justin – it was great to have you back. And as always, without messing up my words, thank you for everything you do for this podcast.
Glad to be here, buddy.
Send requests. Play us out. Tell me what I'm